Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. Happy Sunday. This is Carl Nordgren. I'm talking to you from 97.9 The Hills Studios, and I'm sharing my show, Exploring Your Creative Genius, as I do every Sunday. Happy Sunday to you all. This is the show that believes that there is nothing as important as you investing your time and your effort and your enthusiasm and your fun in developing yourself into the most creative and entrepreneurial and resilient and innovative and adaptive person you can possibly be, because it's going to serve you so well right now in all that you want to do, both your personal and professional life. And it's going to be so important as we move into a future of unknowable unknowns, which is happening right now. And so since it's so important, I refuse to define creativity. I want to help you create your own understanding of what it means to be creative, your own situationally appropriate, multidimensional, dynamic understanding of what it means to be creative. And I've got a new tack for you today. A few years back, I started working with an organization called PRISM, as in the light refracting prism, all cap letters, UK-based. And their work came out of the 1990s, which was declared by the United Nations as the year of the brain. And there in England, over 100 neuroscience research papers were published that were explorations of the relationship between how the brain functions when you are engaged in particular sets of behaviors that you prefer to use when you're taking on your life, taking on work. And they developed an assessment tool, a behavior-based assessment tool, a neuroscience-based assessment tool that I took. I thought it was extraordinary. Most assessment tools have social science and are personality-based. Again, this is the only neuroscience-based assessment tool that's about helping us understand our preferred behaviors. When we're given the opportunity to engage in work using our naturally preferred behaviors, the sort of top-line understanding, finding that they came to was your brain's performance is optimized. When you work the way you want to work, your brain's performance is optimized. You learn better. You're more prepared to explore. You're less anxious. And so when I worked with PRISM, I found that their deliverable takes our behaviors and collects them in four large clusters. There's a whole lot of detail below each cluster. It's really, really, really rich with insight. But I'm going to stay at sort of the top four large clusters of preferred behaviors. And what I got to do was spend a whole lot of time finding, mapping the natural creative behaviors that are found in each set of preferred behaviors as identified by PRISM. So let's dig into that. One of the first clusters, and I think it's the one that I always start with, is the cluster that is about us as analytical people. Our behaviors are when we find a new project, when we've given a new challenge, there's a certain group of people. Does this sound familiar to you? As do you recognize yourself in this? A certain number of people, the first thing they want to do is get all the data, get all the information that's already available, and bring a methodical approach to carefully exploring that data, exploring that information, looking for the patterns of that information, looking for the disconnects in those patterns, the gaps in breaks in those patterns, looking for the anomalies, because in that anomaly, in that break, there very often will be a fresh new insight as to what we can do with this data. Since there's this, you take this methodical approach, that means you're going to be looking at this data from every angle. Creativity is a numbers game, so when you look at this data from a number of perspectives, it's very likely that you're going to see something in that data set, in that information collection, that others won't see because of your methodical, careful approach of looking at it from every angle. Another behavior that's associated with this cluster is a fair-mindedness. People who are analytical team tend to be fair-minded, which means you're going to give new ideas a chance. New ideas that conflict with your ideas, you're going to give them a chance. So all these wonderful creative qualities associated with that behavior set that frequently people will say to me, well, I'm not creative because I'm too analytical. Well, here we go, right? There's all kinds of creative expression and creative dynamic captured in analytical behaviors. Something that we need to be cautious about or aware of when we're in this, if we find ourselves in this analytical group, is that in fact we are cautious, right? These analytical people tend to be a little bit more cautious. And so what you want to do is you want to find a low risk method, right? A way to get started, but that doesn't put you at risk and it's easy for you to get started. My favorite one is the quote from Teddy Roosevelt, where he said, you want to do what you can with what you have where you are. Boy, talk about low risk. Talk about getting started easily, right? You're not risking anything other than the stuff that you've already got close at hand. So that's an important insight for folks who are very analytical. My warning for folks who are analytical is this phrase that you've heard me share with you many, many times now, that if you want to understand something new, first get used to it, then study it. And so if an analytical person can anticipate that they're in this project, that they're going to be spending some time studying the data, if they can first get out there into the world where the data comes from and develop some sort of an emotional understanding, some sort of an intuitive understanding of where this data comes from, so then when they then study the data with their methodical, careful, analytical mind, they're going to have this emotional scaffolding where the facts and the information is going to find its relationship much more effectively. So those are the folks who are inclined to be analytical. A second group of folks, again, you're facing a new challenge, you're being given, you find a new opportunity, and your inclination at the very beginning is to get started. You've got a bias for action. You're just going to get started. You know that there's good ideas out there. Right? Not all good ideas come from within a creative mind. There's a whole lot of good ideas out in the world that you can discover. And when you have a bias for action, man, you're out there discovering these great new ideas. And you're getting smarter times two when you have a bias for action. There's all kinds of intelligences all throughout our body that get engaged when we're moving. Right? When you're sitting, you're at your least creative. When you're moving, you engage all these other intelligences, and presumably your movement is going to take you out into the world that you're going to be studying, out in the world that you're going to be engaging, out in the world that you're going to be interacting with. And so you get smarter that way too, right? You're starting to develop your own proprietary understanding of what's going on, and we'll pick up a bias for action when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Carl Nordgren. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. In the first segment, I introduced this neuroscience-based behavior assessment called PRISM and how excited I was to have the opportunity to take the four behavior sets that PRISM identifies and find the natural creative qualities that are associated with those preferred sets of behaviors. We started with folks who are analytical, who when they start a new project, the first thing they want to do is to collect the data, collect the information, analyze that. We're just started now with those folks who have a bias for action when they get a new project. And so we talked about how you get so much smarter when you're moving. Something else about the folks who have a bias for action is that you're daring, right? That makes sense. You're more daring than many of us are. So you're exploring places others don't go. So you're finding perspectives that others don't have. And isn't that a great thing in your creative life? You're open, your daring quality means that you're also open to new ideas, which is a wonderful thing. You're also tough-minded, you folks who have a bias for action. You're tough-minded. You're ready to make the tough decision. one of the tough decisions I can think of in the creative process is, okay, that first idea that you had that you've already invested in, that you've been developing and that you like, hey, you're getting smarter as you go along and you find an idea that should perhaps replace that first idea. And that's a tough decision for a lot of folks. And so there's a where your tough-mindedness will serve you, right? Your ability to let go of that early favorite idea that you had. People with a bias for action seem to also have a lot of qualities in them that that bring them to a leadership role. They're ready to lead. They're ready to take on the leadership role when that's needed. You also work well through adversity, which is a great quality for a leader to have. You've got a strong practical streak, but at the same time, you're ready to be a rule breaker. And that's good either, you know, to have both of those qualities within you. That practical streak will serve you frequently. You got to have practical ideas in the creative world, but often you need to be a rule breaker to find new ideas to bring to the table. People who have a bias for action are often very competitive. And so you need to make sure that your leadership isn't so much a command and control, right? I got the right idea and I'm going to insist that you do this right idea, but really temper that with a wonderful sense of climate control, more of a servant leadership approach, right? Make sure you're not dictating to people, but rather you're listening to them and understanding what they believe their ideas are and help those ideas come together as we move forward, as you move forward in your leadership role. I would tell my students all the time that the most effective, the most useful authority for you to have isn't the authority that is on the org chart or the authority that's on your business card, but rather it's the authority that the organization grants to you. They give you authority because they know you're going to use it well to their self-interest, and that's very much a servant leadership quality. So those are the first two behavior clusters, being analytical, having a bias for action. Here's a third. Does this describe you? Do you see yourself in this, that when a new project comes along, a new opportunity, the first thing you want to do is pick up the phone and call your friends, call your associates, and bring other people together to work on this with you, right? To bring a collaborative approach to work. Here are some of the qualities that you'll likely find in somebody whose behavior preferences are to collaborate. Is you're going to be thoughtful. You're going to be generous. You're going to be supportive of others. And aren't those qualities, folks, that are going to be really effective at building a great social capital network? So you've got a lot of, you want to collaborate? You've got a lot of people out there with whom you can collaborate because you've been so thoughtful and generous with your friends, your associates. It's, you know, social capital. Time and again, research shows that the best ideas don't come from within your imagination, but they come from your social capital network. Ideas that are both practical and unique come from your social capital network. You want your social capital network to be diverse, and that's great because that's another quality that you collaborators have got, is that you're open-minded with people, open-minded with ideas, and that results in having a diversity of contacts, a diversity within your contacts, because you certainly in your social capital network don't want everybody to be looking at the world the same way, right? You want people with different perspectives on what's going on. You collaborators tend to be very generous listeners, listening for the very best of what folks have to say. And so imagine now you're on a collaborative team and you're listening for the very best of what the team is saying. There was a time where I sort of saw myself in these collaborative team experiences as somebody who was sort of the curator of all the goodness that was coming, right? I would keep track of all the very best of what we had to say so I could then feed that back to folks. A great way to serve the team is to listen and collect the best of the team and serve it back to them. Collaborators very frequently in their behavior sets show that they don't really like being rushed. Right, they like a good, easy, steady pace. And since that's true, since you don't like being rushed, you don't need to be rushed if you get started, right? If you get started, you can cultivate that more deliberate pace. So get started. There's a good balance in the collaborator mindset, behavior set, a good balance between not being rigid but still appreciating the importance of some structure, right? And you need some structure to especially when the creative work that you're doing is going to be participative, is going to be collaborative. There needs to be some structure. You have good nature. You're upbeat. Those are really very attractive qualities. You help others get the very best out of themselves. Isn't that a wonderful thing to bring to a group, is to be the person that helps others get their very best out of themselves? So as we conclude the collaborative group, let me reinforce this one concern that I would have about us collaborators, because I show up pretty high in the PRISM assessment that I did in the area of collaboration. And that is that if I don't have a strong bias for action, I need to be intentional and overcome that, right? So one of my quick pieces of advice for folks who don't have a bias for action is the wonderful Teddy Roosevelt quote, "Do what you can with what you have, where you are." As we close out this segment, let me state something that I should have shared with you from the very beginning, and that is this PRISM assessment, behavior assessment, doesn't say you're only one of these things. Most of us tend to be pretty strong in two of these four behavior sets, and some of us will even show a little bit of strength in a third. But usually we're pretty strong in two of them, and so don't, you know, if as I'm going on here and I'm going to share the fourth here after the break, the fourth behavior set, don't feel like you have to be just one of these. You can find yourself in a couple of them, and I hope you do come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. In this show, I've been sharing with you the findings of PRISM neuroscience-based behavior assessments that have found that they can cluster our preferred behaviors into four big clusters. We've covered the first three. We talked about folks who want to be analytical when a new project starts off. We talked about folks who have a bias for action when a new challenge emerges. We've talked about folks who have a collaborative nature when they're working on a new challenge. This fourth one is the one that I think frequently people think that this is the profile and the behaviors of a creative person. Again, my job, my calling is to help us see all the wonderful creative qualities that exist in all of these behavior sets. The fourth one is the imaginative slash intuitive behavior set. When you are faced with a new challenge, a new opportunity, your preferred behavior is to just sort of go inward to find out what you're looking for in your own creative mind, and qualities that are associated with you, if that describes you, is that you're flexible. And you've got broad interests, so you've got lots of dots. Remember Steve Jobs talked when he was asked what's the definition for creativity? He said, well, creativity is just simply connecting the dots, so make sure you have lots of dots. Imaginative, intuitive people with broad interests tend to have, therefore, lots of dots working in their favor. You tend to be unorthodox. And so you're already well on the road to overcoming, to not being captured by the status quo because of your unorthodox nature, your unorthodox perspectives that you bring to your life and to the world. I find this true for myself because this is a group, a cluster that I find is my home. And that is that sometimes when I come up with an idea for a new book or for a new something, I get so excited about the idea itself that sometimes I don't feel like I really need to take action because I've already enjoyed the idea. Well, so I'm suggesting that there's a certain amount of inertia that is sometimes associated with us imaginative, intuitive people, with our vivid imaginations. And so one of the things I would urge you to do, if that describes you, if you're often slow to do something about this great idea, is to take that idea for a walk. Go wonder about the idea while you're walking, right? So you've already overcome the physical inertia by just simply going for a walk. You're good at adapting. And since it's inevitable that a project that you're going to work on is going to change, it's going to become something else as you work on it, it's awfully important to be good at adapting so that you can, in fact, allow the better version, the more effective version, the more practical version of the idea to emerge. You're energetic and enthusiastic, and that's great. Was it Ralph Waldo Emerson who said, "Nothing great is ever accomplished without enthusiasm"? So you have a natural enthusiasm for the work that you're doing, and you have a high level of energy, and that's often very attractive for others. And speaking of others, you also have a strong rapport with others. You develop a good rapport with others very easily. You have a strong dislike for structure. Don't you think we need a little structure for our creative lives? I did my very best writing when I taught at Duke because I had some structure. I knew that every week I was going to be in the classroom on these nights for this long a period of time. And with that structure in my life, it then seemed to give me permission to then do my best creative writing. So I have a strong dislike for structure and have to remind myself how well I've been served by structure time and time again. So folks, those are the four behavior sets. If you find yourself in more than one, let's conclude with this. The PRISM assessment makes it quite clear that none of us have a home in only one of these behavior sets. Most of the PRISM reports that I've seen for others, I don't get to see whose they are, but I get to see the results, show certainly a dominating one, but a pretty strong second cluster as well. I tend to be strong in this last one that we're talking about, imaginative and intuitive. I'm pretty good in the collaborative one as well. I'm not very good at the others. I certainly am not good in the very first one I talked about, or excuse me, I don't show a lot of behavior preferences is how I should say that. Not that I'm not good, but I don't show a lot of behavior preferences in the analytical side, and only a little bit of strength in the bias for action side. So I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you can just be so mindful of how important it is for you as you go through the week to find ways to express yourself creatively, to learn more about yourself as a creative person, to bring your creative ideas and knowledge and energy to share with others as we face the future of unknowable unknowns. You need to be the most creative person you can possibly be. Your community needs to be the most creative community it can be. Our nation, I think it's even patriotic for us to call for us to be the most creative people we can be as we face the future of unknowable unknowns. I hope you have a great week. I'll talk to you next week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.